Today is the day to wake, work, and win. Welcome to The Standard.
You got a real legit setup back there, making us feel silly with our little flag.
It's I can't take credit for this. This was my wife actually did this for me.
Oh, that's awesome. Because you've been at this for what, like 10 years?
I've been podcasting since 2015. So, yeah, about 7 years.
Man, that was like podcasting before podcasting was cool.
So how many episodes then?
About 1,000.
Okay.
Wow. Right.
Do you have a guest on each one, or are you, you've got talking points that you, maybe you just hit? You just talk, you know, kind of give a message.
No, I actually have guests for just about every one of them. I mean, sometimes I do a solo show, but yeah, it's not often.
So I was looking at, you have a book that you published, I think around the same time you started the podcast, right? 2015. Did you self-publish that or did you write through somebody?
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's interesting to talk about that because we self-published two books. And just wonder what your experience was with that.
It was fine. I really didn't know what I was doing, to be honest. I just, you know, I published a book and put it out in the fatherhood category. And it did fine. It still continues to sell quite a bit. It's about as basic book as you could possibly imagine. I just wrote another book, and it's actually, we're submitting it to 3 different publishers right now for a book deal. And, but this one's, it was actually supposed to be launched. It was supposed to be launched, but the publishing agency that I went with, went bankrupt. And I found out about 2 months ago that they went bankrupt. So I got all the rights to my book back and hired an agent. And now we're going after the biggies. So hopefully we'll have a book deal here within the next 30 days.
What's this new book all about?
It's called The Pursuit of Legendary Fatherhood. It's completely done, edited, designed, cover, whole nine yards. Basically, easiest project in the world just to submit over to a publisher. They don't have to do hardly any work except for market it. But it's divided up into 4 sections. First one is what we call the current state. So the things that, you know, men, husbands, and fathers face on the daily, you know, in here and then externally. It's divided up. The second part is husband. Third part is father. Last part is leader.
It seems like now more than any other time in history, there's been more of a push to have better fathers out there. It seemed like, you know, honestly, coming up until recently, it's just been like, hey, the father's the provider. The mother will take care of the home and the nurturing and almost like leading the house. But as long as the dad is there to make the money, everything's good. You're a good dad as long as you provide a roof and 3 squares and maybe some one vacation a year. Like that was your duty as a father. But now it seems like there is this, I don't know if push is the right word, but there's more expected of being a father now than ever. I mean, what do you think that changes?
I don't know if there's necessarily a push, but I think there's a huge desire for men to step up. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's a couple things going on, I think. Number one, if you really look at how connected everyone is now, right? I mean, social media and just, you know, we have a window to the world at our fingertips at all times. So we no longer have to like live between our own ears and our own heart. And we only see the world, you know, on the local level. We can see everything. And so I think what we see now is opportunities for men to really step up and embrace this desire. Cause I don't think it's a push. I think it's a desire from a lot of dads. And I don't know if that necessarily comes from a negative experience of them growing up. There's a lot of guys out there that had a very positive experience, and all they want to do is continue that legacy with their own kids. And then there's a lot of guys out there that had the opposite. You know, they had a really poor experience, and there's a massive desire because they know firsthand how bad it feels to have it the other way around. And what I can tell you is that we just don't know what good looks like. So I think what we're seeing right now is this generation of fathers that, man, they really have it in them to want to step up and step in and to do a really good job at fatherhood and being a husband, but they don't know what good looks like. And they're really searching for it. And the last thing I'll say is this, this is not to insult or downplay the previous generation fathers. So like my dad and his dad's, my dad's dad and all that.
This episode is brought to you by us. More importantly, our Patreon. And most importantly, our Patreon members. If you like what you're hearing, think about joining us. Head on over to the-standard.us. And for as little as $3 a month, you can get extra episodes, discounts on gear, monthly conference calls. So head on over to our site at the-standard.us. And remember to always like and subscribe. Back to the show.
They did the best they could, I think, with what they had. Their role was really identified as you're the provider, you're the breadwinner, you know, and that's kind of where your role you can stop if you really wanted to. But I think we're seeing a huge step up in men right now who are like, nope, I want more. And I think that's what we're seeing.
Where do you think that push is coming from?
I think a lot of it has to do with, like I said, the desire. What I see more than anything is men who desperately want to have a fantastic marriage, but they don't know what it looks like. And maybe their parents, a lot of the feedback that I hear is my parents had an okay relationship, or they're divorced or whatever else, or I never really saw my parents affection with each other, and they don't want that. They want to have a good marriage. And same thing with kids. Like, man, my dad wasn't really there as much as I would have loved for him to be. So we're seeing a lot of guys be like, well, that's going to change on my watch.
Hmm. And you have 4 kids, right?
Last time I checked. Yeah.
did this desire to, you know, for some it's to break the cycle, for some it's to continue what their dads gave them. Did it start with your first kid? Did it start before you had kids? Like, when did this drive to be kind of that best version come from?
I would say mine started when I was a kid, without a doubt. You know, my story is rather, I guess, unique. Like, when I tell it, usually people are like, holy crap, like, I've never heard a story quite like that. But yeah, I mean, so my mom and biological father were married in 1971, and they got married really young. Like, they were kids. They were like 20, 21 years old. They had me 4 years later in 75, and they got divorced very quickly after that. And my dad was not a part of my life. I have no recollection of my dad whatsoever. In fact, when I was 4, I really thought that moms just go out and find dads. Like, I remember being in preschool, and I remember dads coming to pick up friends of mine, and I knew what a dad was, but had no clue how they came about. Like, my thought process was moms find them eventually, and then they just move in with us. And dude, I'll never forget being 4 years old. My mom told me one day, she's like, hey, I'm having a friend of mine over for dinner tonight. It's somebody that I think very highly of. In other words, she had been dating him from work. She's like, and I'd really like you to meet him. And I was like, wow. I was like, I've never met another man, right? And no other man has ever been in my house. And I'll never forget this guy walking in my house, man, four years old. And this guy walks in. He was a white collar data software engineer. So he was wearing a suit, came walking in my house, had a trench coat on, a 3-piece suit, a double Windsor tie, briefcase, handlebar mustache, feathered hair. He shakes my hand. And I literally thought my mom found my dad. And I shook this guy's hand. And the very first question I asked this guy is, are you my dad? Are you going to be my dad? And I'll never forget the reaction, or what at least would have felt like, when he was like, whoa, like, and my mom just kind of like laughed. It was kind of like that Jerry Maguire moment. I think, like, when, you know, the main character or the supporting actress's son hugs Tom Cruise for the first time. And, but they did get married. I think my mom kind of took that as a sign. They got married very quickly after that. and they were together for 6 years. And my dad, he adopted me. So I thought, man, our family's complete. Like, this is cool. And my dad was a good guy, but when he drank, which was pretty often, he got very abusive. And so did my mom. And every year that they were married, it just got worse and worse and worse. Physical abuse, mental abuse, verbal abuse. And that was my experience. And I mean, at first anyway. And then I realized after he left, they got divorced when I was 10. I've never seen him since. I really realized, I was like, wait a second. This guy came around when I was 4, and I know about the birds and the bees now. So where the hell did I come from? And I started asking my mom questions, and she was like, yeah, I was married before. You have another dad out there. I was like, well, where is he? She's like, I don't know. And 12 years old, a couple of years roll around, my mom's dating and stuff like that. I've just, without going into a ton of detail, I got to meet my biological father when I was 12, and he only lived 3 miles from us. And man, I was so excited. I got to meet my father, and he hung out with me every week, and he was remarried at the time, had a 2-year-old son. So I had a half brother. He had another one on the way, and he came to my little league games. And I was just like, man, this is so cool. It was my dad. And then about 5 months into our relationship, things began to change. And now that I'm an adult, the best way I can describe it is I just felt a lot of stress on him, a lot of tension on him. And what it really felt like was, if you've ever dated a woman and she's not into you anymore and she hasn't told you yet, but you know it's coming, that's what it felt like, that kind of tension. And just one day I picked up the phone, I called him, and I was like, hey, is something going on? Like, I just feel like something's not right. And he basically told me, it's me, it's not you, and it's too complicated. And that was it. He left again. And that hit me hard. Emotionally overate as a kid, got really fat, failed the eighth grade, had to repeat eighth grade. I did manage to turn my life around and went to high school, graduated college, got my degree, but my mom continued to date several men in between getting married for the third time when I was 18. But every guy was the same guy, heavy drinker, abuser, drugs. I mean, just absolute toxicity. So I always say, like, my childhood was half spent without a father figure, and the other half was usually spent with a toxic one. But I'll finish the story with this. I'm 30 years old, sitting in a coffee shop here in St. Louis, was married, and still married to the same amazing woman, expecting our first son. And I was there every Monday because I had a meeting with my sales team. I was in medical device sales at the time. And I don't know what it was, but I was sitting there and some guy walked in and he caught my attention. And I just kind of looked over at him. I was like, holy crap, that's my father. Hadn't seen him in 18 years. And it was my biological father. And I'll never forget it, because one of the women who was on my sales team, like, she's like, hey, hello, are you still here? Like, you seem like you just saw a ghost. And I was like, yeah, I was like, I'm sorry. I was like a little distracted. I was like, my father just walked in. She's like, I'm sorry, what? And I told her, she's like the one, like, you hadn't seen him since you were 12. I was like, yeah. I was like, that's him right over there. And she's like, oh my God. Like, she got all excited. She's like, oh my, what are you going to go say to him? I was like, I'm not going to say nothing to him. Wow. I was like, I'm 30 years old. I'm a grown man. Like, what am I going to say to him? Nothing. And without one word, she just got up and went over to him. I had no clue what the hell she was even doing. And I saw her talking to him. I was like, oh my God, do I leave? What do I do? And I saw my dad stand up and he walked right in my direction and he extended his hand. He's like, hey, you know, how are you? And I'm like, fine. How are you? Like, I wasn't a total ass to him, but I wasn't nice to him. And I make him sound like a bum. He's actually a very successful entrepreneur and two boys that he's raised, still married to the same woman. And that was 17 years ago. And we've had a relationship ever since. And it's been a good one. And I can tell you that the past is the past, but to answer your question, where dad edge came from, I didn't know what I was doing when I had my first two boys. The time dad edge got started was my kids. My oldest was 6. My youngest at the time was 4. He's now 14. And I had this mediocre marriage with my wife. I was short on patience with my kids. I got all my validation from work. You know, I just kind of like did the whole fatherhood thing half in, half out. I didn't abuse anybody. I didn't hit anybody and didn't get drunk and throw beer bottles at anybody or anything like that, but I was just sort of like half in, half out. And I always swore to myself I would never hit my kids in anger. Well, that all changed. My son, who was 4 at the time, stepped out of line as any 4-year-old would. I had a really horrible day at work that day. Lost one of my biggest customers. It was going to impact our income for the next 6 to 12 months. I spanked him just right on the rear end. Unfortunately, I spanked him and he lost his balance and he fell. And I was like, oh my God, what did I just do? And I went to help him up and he like shuddered, like looked at me like I was a monster. And here's the funny thing. You guys asked about the book, The Pursuit of Legendary Fatherhood. On the back of the book, I wrote the description and my publisher was like, we should not put this copy on the back of this book. I was like, well, that's the copy that's going on it. And the first sentence on the back of the book said, I turned into the monster that I swore I would protect my kids against.
Oof.
That's how Dad Edge got started. And it's been a journey of learning ever since. And here's what I can tell you. Without Dad Edge, without that moment where I turned everything around, I'd be divorced. I'd probably have 2 boys instead of 4. Those 2 boys probably would hate me. I'd probably be on my 2nd or 3rd marriage at this point. I would have an ex-wife that probably wouldn't want anything to do with me. That's where I'd be.
That's an incredible story. What would you say to those people who are so concerned about turning into their fathers, or they see it as this, like, this path that I know I'm going to go down, that, hey, you know, my dad had a bad dad, his dad had a bad dad. Like, this is just who I am. It's in my bones to be a drunk. It's in my bones to have many wives throughout my life. I mean, obviously you turned that around, but it took that painful moment. Is that a requirement to kind of change your ways, or do you think that there's a kind of headed off at the pass?
It's a great question. The answer to that question is, it doesn't matter where you come from or what is up against you. You can be an amazing father. And what I'll tell you is the number one thing, and you actually, the way you phrased the question, you illustrated it beautifully. What we focus on grows, what we focus on expands. You know, I can't do this, I can't do that, I can't be the dad that, I can't be the drunk, I can't be this, I can't be that. Well, guess what? That's exactly what you're going to be, because what we focus on expands and grows. If you don't believe me, no matter what you do, don't think of a pink, hairy, white elephant. Pink, hairy elephant in your front yard wearing a white hat.
It's exactly right? What you think about.
You can't help but think about that. It's almost like, it's exactly what you think about. The other thing too is that I want you, you know, for guys who are like, I can't be the abusive father that I grew up with. I can't be the drunk father that I grew up with. That's like trying to drive to Cancun and looking in your rearview mirror saying, I can't drive north. No matter what I do, I can't drive north. You're not going to get to Cancun like that, and you're not going to get there safely, and you're not going to get there with any type of sound mind. So what we focus on grows. So like, for instance, if you want to be an amazing father and husband, then go out and learn the skills to go create that future for yourself. Go become the person that you want to be. Don't run from what you think you shouldn't, because what you are going to focus on will absolutely expand and grow.
So going back to what the story you talked about, meeting your dad again, now you've had this relationship that is growing. Sounds like that's exactly what maybe you, him, both of you started to do, is look forward. But I'm curious of what did change? I mean, there had to have been some conversation you had with him of, you know, how can we have this relationship now? Like, how can we move forward? What's changed? Why not, obviously, 18 years ago, Dad? Why did it have to take till now?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So my dad and I had a relationship, so I'd say 3 to 6 months, first 3 to 6 months of our relationship, and we avoided the topic at pretty much at all costs. And then I took him out to dinner one night, and I basically said, and he knew I was coming. He even kind of like smiled, and he's like, so what are we talking about when I took him out to dinner? And I basically sat him down and I said, I just want to talk about this one time, just once. And I want to get it all out, everything. And then I don't want to talk about it again. I was like, and I think I even used these words, can you please tell me what the hell happened? can you please tell me why you left when I was little, and then you left again when I was 12? Why'd you do that? And I held my dad to the fire, and I just wanted him to tell me. And my dad very humbly owned every freaking bit of it. And my dad was like, worst thing I ever did. And I did it twice. He was like, I lived with that regret every day. I thought about it every day. He was like, but you know, I was a kid when I had you, and I thought I was doing the right thing. He's like, you know, every time I went to go pick you up, and you don't remember this because you were so little, you were a baby. Every time I went to go pick you up, you just scream and cry. You didn't want me. You wanted your mom. He's like, and when you're a kid raising a kid, like, you think to yourself, God bless, am I doing more harm than good by taking this kid? And then when your mom wanted to get remarried when you were 4, she really pushed for me to sign over parental rights. And to be honest, it was the hardest thing. He's like, I crumbled. Like, I cried like a freaking baby. He's like, but I thought I was giving you a better life. I really, really did. Because I thought, this guy's stable. He's a white collar worker. It's going to be a better life for you. You don't want anything to do with me. And he's like, and then when I met you again, when you were 12, he's like, that one really, then it was the nail in the coffin for me, because I shouldn't have done that. He goes, but you know, it was so complex. I was 35 at the time, 2-year-old son, another one on the way. I was trying so hard to start my life over again. Then all of a sudden, like, here you come. He's like, and your mom was kind of being difficult as well. He's like, and it was so hard, and it really created like tension in my marriage a little bit, and I didn't know what to do, and I was still young. And so I made that decision, and then I realized, you know, that it was not the best decision. He's like, and I've had to live with that. It's been like a horrible prison to me for years. He's like, and here you are again. And he's like, I don't want to go anywhere. He's like, I want to know you. I want a relationship with you. And he's like, you know, if you can accept my apology, I'm just an idiot making mistakes. He's like, but if you'll have me, you know, I'd like to be a part of your life. And we made a promise at that point. We're like, okay. And this is where I'll tell you that whatever we focus on grows. I was like, okay, well, let's go co-create a relationship that we feel really good about. We're not going to worry about the past. The past is the past. Let's focus on what can be and what could be. And that's what we did.
It seems like, and I'm a relatively new dad. I have a 3-year-old and a 14-month-old. And it seems like dads put them a lot of pressure and a lot of energy into the wrong things. Like, to be a good dad, my checklist is I need to make a lot of money. I need to, you know, be able to provide experiences and a nice house and all this other stuff, because that's what I think my kids expect from me, or what I think my wife expects from me. When in reality, my kid just wants to play Lincoln Logs and sit on the ground and hang out. And so when I have those moments of like, dude, I am being a horrible father right now, the answer is always, he just wants time. Like, I come home and we're both firemen, and we work at a relatively busy station. And you have those days when you come home and you're like, I have nothing to give you. Like, I'm like totally exhausted. I have nothing to give you. And in those moments, all they want is for you to be present. And sometimes that's like a pretty difficult thing to do, but it seems like your dad had this idea of the type of good dad, like what it takes to be a good dad. And when all in reality, you just wanted him to be there.
I did. Kids spell L-O-V-E-T-I-M-E. It's actually one of the chapters in my book. And that's true. Like, listen, your kids, our kids, they don't care what kind of car we drive. They might say like, oh, dad, I wish I had a cool car. They don't care. They don't care what kind of designer clothes we wear, right? They don't care how many hours we pull at the fire station. They don't care how many hours we pull at the office. They don't care how many podcasts I do, right? They don't care how much money is in the bank account. They don't care how much is in their 529s. They don't care how much is in our retirement. They want our time. And sometimes we just simply overcomplicate the hell out of it. And what I mean by that is, like, last night was a perfect example. My 8-year-old just got into soccer, and I didn't play soccer growing up. Like, I'm terrible at soccer. He doesn't care. He just wants me. He just wants his old man to go out there and kick the ball with him. He does not care if dad's good or bad. He just wants to have that time. And my 8-year-old last night, he's like, "Hey, can we go up to Liberty, which is the high school right up the street where my kids go, and can we go up to Liberty and play on the soccer field?" "Yeah, we can." And you know, I think we were up there for 45 minutes, and it was the best time part of his whole day. He even told me that when I put him in bed. I was like, "What was the best part of your day?" He was like, "Playing soccer up at Liberty." It was like the simplest thing ever. We had a ball and a goal, and we just kicked it back and forth. And to him, that was everything.
Before we get too far away from your story of reconnecting with your dad, I'm curious, do you ever find out what your coworker said to him when she walked over there?
Yeah, I did. That's a good question. I don't think anybody's ever asked that. She walked up to him and she said, "Hey, you don't know me, but I know your son, and he's here in this coffee shop. And I think you would be doing yourself a huge disservice if you didn't go over and meet him."
Wow.
"Go over and talk to him." And yeah, she was just very, just said it like it was. And here's the part I didn't tell you about. They were about 50 feet away and it was loud coffee shop, so I couldn't hear him, but I could read his lips. And I did see him say, "Where is he?" And he started looking around, and that's when our eyes met. And he just he stood up. He took a deep breath. You could tell it was a humbling moment for him, and he just walked right over. But that's what she said to him.
Do you still talk? Do you see that coworker? Is she still around? I mean, you obviously left that profession. I mean, that's kind of yeah. Cool moment that you always have with that. I mean, if she doesn't get up and walk across that coffee shop, nothing. You may still be doing sales. You know, you said that kind of led to the dad edge.
It all did. I did not. I mean, that's a really good reference point. I don't think I'd be doing any of this stuff if she had not done that. Cause I gotta be honest, there was pride, there was ego. Maybe I was being protective of myself or whatever it was, but there was no part of me that was going to go up and talk to him. Not one.
What do you think the difference is? I mean, you have 4 boys. Craig's got a boy and a girl. I've got a 13-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl. So, I mean, you've talked to enough people and, you know, writing books on this, you have some experience, but what do you think the biggest difference is? Are there differences in raising boys and girls as far as getting, you know, you talk about love, they spell love time. Do you think if you give that same time to a daughter, that's what they want too? I mean, everybody knows there's differences as how you deal with things and how they emotionally react and how you talk to them. But from my experience, I've I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I felt like I've raised my daughter and son kind of the same way. I really didn't change my approach. And I don't know if that's good, that's bad, you know? I mean, I just always looked at it as, I just got to be a father in their lives, and I don't want to try to be someone I'm not, you know, by changing my parenting for them. Just, I wanted to give them me, genuine me. But I mean, is there certain things you can do better for boys and girls that help?
I think that's a great question. I think that there are several things that are universal. So when I wrote this book and I went with the original publishing agency and the book was being edited, one of the pieces of feedback that came back was, "Hey, you've done a really good job of writing this section on being a father, but what we want you to do is split up boys and girls. We want you to add one whole chapter for raising boys and one whole chapter for raising girls. And we want several sections of it." So I think I did about 8 to 10 sections points for each one of those. And I went back to my publisher at first. I was like, "You want me to write a chapter on raising girls? I have no girls. Like, come on, who am I to write this?" It was like major imposter syndrome. And they kind of laughed. They're like, "Yeah, but dude, you have 1,000 episodes of a podcast and thousands of hours in your mastermind. Like, clearly you've talked to experts on raising daughters and you know enough stories and you know enough things that you can at least cite these people." And I really went back and I was like, "You know what I do? I really, really do. I've got firsthand experience with raising boys." And I went back and really did some due diligence and research on some of the things that were most meaningful. And what I'll tell you is, so with boys, you know, I think there are some elements that are the same, but raising boys is, you know, boys are going to learn how to love a woman by how you love their mom, right? Here's the other thing too. They're going to understand how they're going to be treated by how your mom, their mom treats you. And they get a front row seat to, you know, that relationship and all the good and all maybe the not so good. But the one thing I'll tell you is that being a boy, what I always tell men, what I tell my boys is, and this is to quote, you know, American Sniper, one of my most favorite movies, is, you know, there are three types of people in the world. There's the sheepdog, there's the wolf, and there's the sheep. And I tell my boys all the time, I was like, you are a sheepdog. You're not a wolf. You're not someone who preys upon the innocent sheep. You're not a bully. You're there to protect yourself and people that you love. That's what a sheepdog does. Same thing. I use another quote with my boys a lot, and that is be a lion among the sheeps or be a stallion among the donkeys, because the world's full of donkeys. And I'm not saying, and the message that I send to my boys is you're not better than. You are not here and they're here, but the way you operate is here. And I'll give you a great example of that. My two oldest boys are 16 and 14. They're now, unfortunately, in that element. They're both in high school where some of their circle of friends are getting into really bad things. You know, smoking weed, shoplifting, you know, those types of things. And what I can tell you is I've always ingrained in those boys, be a stallion among the donkeys. The donkeys are going to go with the herd. They're going to make dumb decisions. But guess what? There's a lot of donkeys out there that really want to be a stallion, but they don't want to speak up and do it. So, for instance, both my oldest boys have no desire to do drugs, none. And they haven't. And I know that for a fact. In fact, so much so that my 14-year-old feels so strongly about it that he will end a friendship with any of his friends if he knows that they're doing drugs. And he's done it. I've seen him do it. He did this thing where they were passing around a vape and my 14-year-old goes, yeah, I'll try that. And he grabbed it and he freaking chucked this thing in the woods. And this buddy of his went toe-to-toe with him. And he's like, dude, what the hell's wrong with you, man? He goes, don't do that shit around me. He's like, I don't want any part of that and don't do it around me. And if you're going to do that, we're done. And with that, two other friends in that friend group was like, yeah, man, me too. Yeah, man, me too. Those kids would have never said that had he not stood his ground and said, this is what I stand for and this is what I'm doing. And I always tell them, you're not better than anybody else, but be okay with operating in that fashion. So I think we need to teach our boys that, right? Leadership, that's a huge one. The other thing too is I am a huge proponent of chivalry, right? And respect. And I would say like the old school stuff. So like, for instance, you know, I tell my boys all the time, when you shake someone's hand, you stand up, you look them in the eye. Nice to meet you. You know, things like that. Treating, you know, they're dating right now too. I'm like, you treat their father and mother with respect. You're taking out their daughter. So shake their hand. Thank you for having me over. Thank you for letting me take your daughter out tonight. What time would you like her home? You know, things like that, that go a really, really long way. Respect and manners and all these things, right? That's boys. I mean, that's just super high level. We could really get in the weeds. Here's the thing with girls though, especially with fathers. And this one might hit you in the heart. And I've heard this from many experts. How you operate is how she's going to measure every single man that comes into her life. So by the way you love her mom, that's how she's going to measure how she's going to be treated from another man. And how you treat her too, how you treat your daughter as well. The other thing too is that the biggest thing that I've heard over and over and over again from experts who are raising daughters is your daughter has one thing on her mind is, am I worthy of my dad's heart? Am I worthy of my dad's heart? That's like, it's such a core thing for her, right? Is, am I worthy of my dad's heart? And when we go to have conversations with our daughters, whether it be about life, whether it be about them, whether it be about dating, whether it be about maybe something they did wrong, is I've heard this quote, always aim for the heart of your daughter. Because in the background, how she's operating is like, I just want to make my dad proud. Even if she's in those teenage years where she's not talking to you, right? Or she's distant, or she's doing this, or she's dramatic. At the core of how she's operating is, am I worthy of my dad's heart?
So let's say you're going to go into a conversation with your daughter and she's messing up at school, whatever. You're saying, start that conversation with like, listen, I love you no matter what. Like, start with that. You are worthy, and then go into the problem. I mean, you still have to address issues, right?
Sure. One of the things that you can do, and this is a great, whether you have a boy or a girl, and I would say more so even for a girl. So there's an organization called Clear Leadership. They can be found at clearleadership.com. It's not our skill set. However, we have learned it, and I utilize this a lot. Whether you're raising a boy or a girl, this is really important. Whenever you go to have what could be a very triggering conversation where it could maybe decimate, you know, your kid or your daughter or whatever else, there's this skill set called the cube that you can use. And the cube is a 4-step process to have an otherwise triggered conversation. It starts with observations, thoughts, feelings, wants. So I'll give you an example of what this looks like. But yeah, you're right. If your daughter, like, let's just say you catch her doing something dishonest, right? Or something like that. And what a lot of us will do is be like, hey, I love you, but you know, this happened and this happened and this happened and yada, yada, yada. And, you know, and you just go barreling in, right? With a lot of emotion, a lot of anger or whatever else. That's how we usually have triggered conversations. I mean, think about it when you have a triggered conversation with your wife. You could be like, man, I don't understand why you talk to me like this. Like, that's just really not cool. Like, why do you always disrespect me? I don't really like it. Like, when you do that, it pisses me off. That's how we as human beings have conversations that are otherwise triggered. And it could really fall flat, especially if you're talking to your daughter. Now, if you start off with like an observation, right? And I'll give you an example of how I did this really poorly and how I did it really, really well. My 14-year-old, he's one of those kids that is kind of messy. And he leaves his trash and his dishes and popcorn bags and everything else. It just drives me crazy. And normally I'm pretty calm. I use that skill set called the cube. But I went in one day and I just was having a bad day. And I was like, dude, I was like, what is all this stuff all over the floor? I was like, look at this. I was like, yeah, bowls over here. You got an empty Gatorade bottle over here. You got your popcorn bag over here. You got your trash here. Like, who do you think is going to clean this up, man? This is so disrespectful. Like, this is incredibly disrespectful. This pisses me off when you do this, because the message that you're sending to everyone is, I am not going to clean up after myself and someone else is going to do this for me. And I don't appreciate that. I'm like yelling at him. And he just kind of sat there and took it. And he basically said, you don't have to yell at me. If you just ask me to pick it up, I'll do it. And of course the ego jumped in. And I was like, well, if you just did it, I wouldn't have to ask. And I'm like yelling. And he's like, yeah, but you still don't have to yell at me. Now that's the normal way we go to reprimand our kids, right? Using the cube, you start with an observation. Hey, I noticed that there's some popcorn bags on the floor and I noticed there's a bowl and some dishes and that kind of thing. That's observations. We both can see that. Thoughts. Thoughts are a sentence. Feelings are a word. The story that I'm telling myself is maybe you forgot. Also, another thought that I have is maybe you think that other people are going to come in behind you and clean this up so you don't have to do it. And when I have those thoughts, as we get to feelings, number three, when I have those thoughts, I feel a little frustrated and I feel a bit disrespected. And then when you get to the wants, because what I truly want is for all of us to pick up after ourselves so we can have a cleaner environment and everyone takes full ownership of their own mess. Now you can see the difference between how we go barreling in, and it could be a daughter with a lot of energy, and where they could be like, oh my God, like dad's freaking out on me. He doesn't like me or he doesn't love me or whatever. But when we use something like the cube, like that 4-step process, that conversation becomes way less triggered and way more calm.
Is that how you enter in conversations with your wife then as well?
Yeah.
I would imagine that you would have to, and maybe it's just experience or practice doing that, but in the moment when you are feeling those emotions of like rage, do you say, hey, I need a minute, I'm going to go chill out? Because I know that that also can be an issue when they want to talk and I'm not ready and I go away for a little while. That's not what they want either. They want to hammer this out right now. I mean, how are you handling those situations where they would like a resolution, but I know me and personally, I need some time to like get my thoughts together, which I think aggravates them even more.
Yeah. And so I'll really put this into your world. Okay. It's not the fact that you need space. I mean, sometimes we need space. Sometimes we need a little bit of like wiggle room between having this conversation and because I'm triggered right now, or I don't want to have a conversation when I feel a certain way. So we'll be like, I need a minute to think about this. What I will tell you is that you really don't need that minute or that space if you know the skills to do it. And I'll give you a perfect example of this. You guys are firefighters, right?
We try to be.
Right? He's not much of one.
You try to be. Yeah. You run into a burning building. You run into a burning house. Are you freaking out or are you calm?
Pretty calm.
Yeah, that's what we do. So
pretty calm. Yeah. Why are you calm?
Well, it's our job.
Trained.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Yep.
What'd you say? Trained?
Yeah, we've trained for that.
You've trained for that.
Yep.
So you have a skill.
Yeah.
You have a skill. Like, so then you take someone like me, I run into a burning house. There's a part of me that's like, holy shit, how am I going to get this fire out? I don't even know where to point this water. Do I point it at the base of it? Do I point it at the top of it? Where do I start? Where's the smoke coming from? Like, that's what's going on in my mind. Like, holy crap, what do I got to do? What do I got to do? And there's a part of me that's freaking out because I haven't been trained and I don't have the skills. Well, guess what? Your marriage, your communication, raising your kids, it all boils down to the exact same principles. You can learn skills within communication, conversational excellence, where you're using skill sets like tactical empathy, emotional labels, mirroring, voice tone, generative questions, creating an environment of psychological safety, all these things that are so important to having these conversations and having these connections. And that's where a lot of times where you don't have to think. You don't need space to be like, I'm not really sure. When you understand the skills, you can have the conversation and you can do it in a really positive way.
I want to go back to when you were talking about your son basically standing up to his friends and saying, hey, I'm not okay with this. And it really got me thinking that if you can learn that skill set of how to whittle down your circle earlier in life, how much farther and faster you'll get to where you want to go. Because it seems like, you know, and we talked about this on one of our other episodes, is like, how small was your circle in high school? And then how small is your circle now? And valuing positive relationships and saying that it's completely okay to break up with your friends when they start to go down a wrong path. I mean, yeah, in high school, they're going to start drinking and you mentioned shoplifting, but when you get older, well, those guys are going to spend their money poorly and they're going to cheat on their wives. And it's like, if you can see, hey, this person who I might've hung out with every single day growing up and I know their family and we've been on vacations and man, they're starting to mess up, and you can lend them a hand and say, hey man, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to start doing these things. If you want to join me, that's great. And if not, dude, like this friendship's over. I mean, that is a skill in itself that if you can master that young, man, you have like a cheat code.
Yeah. Not many 14-year-olds are going to do what you described, you know, your son doing, you know? So I agree. I mean, I would think that would be one, it would be a very proud moment for any dad, especially for you to hear that. But two, it's like, how do we get people, kids nearing puberty, right? Or starting, you know, just starting to be adults. How do we get them to stand up like that? Because that's a quality that will take anybody far.
Yeah. So, and I would say the answer to that question is you got to start before they're teenagers. You got to start having conversations with them, you know, 6, 7, 8 years old about stuff like this. right? The other thing too is you have to latch on to what it is that has them really excited or something that they're really passionate about, and being very open about how whatever it is that they're passionate about, they're excited about, could be decimated if they get into the wrong thing or the wrong friend group. And sometimes I'll be really honest. Sometimes they got to fall flat on their face for them to experience it firsthand, for them to really get it. And the final thing I'll say is this too. You have to live it. You, as in us, as dads, we have to live it. The best lessons are caught, not taught. If you're telling your kid that, hey, stay away from alcohol, and you got a beer in your hand, that's not going to land. If you're telling your kids like, hey, don't smoke weed, and maybe your kids know that that's what you're doing, that's going to fall flat. You know, if you're telling them to get off screens, right? Hey, don't stop playing so many video games, get off your phone. And they see you constantly on your phone. Do what I say, not what I do. That doesn't work for them. You've got to be willing to live that way and to show them that you're living that way for them to really get it.
At a certain point, our kids are, they're going to do their own things. They're going to live their own lives, make their own mistakes.
Sure.
What type of things are you doing where you're like, you know what, I tried my best, and you know, like there are going to be some kids who are going to get into the wrong thing, despite all of our efforts to point them in the right direction. At what point do you ever just kind of like let them go and say, hey, you're your own man now. You're going to go out and make these mistakes. You know, like I'm always here for you, but I don't know. Like, is there ever a point when I know our job's not done ever as parents, but I see a lot in our job since we run the majority EMS calls, and we'll see these kids, teens, 20s, that are clearly down the wrong path. And it's like, at what point as parents do we kind of just let them go and do that? Do we ever? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so I think it's really important for kids to fall flat on their face a lot of times, for them to really feel it. I feel like one of the problems with society is parents are running after their kids with poor behavior with golden parachutes, you know, waiting to save them. My kids are, you know, they weren't always making the best decisions. I had one kid who got caught shoplifting, and I will tell you, that was the lesson. That was the most powerful lesson that kid learned. And it was because of, and I'm happy to share the story of how we went through that process. And that's how he's at where he's at now, where he wants nothing to do with it. But I'm happy to share the story if you guys want to hear it.
Yeah. I mean, I want to know, like, to me, you want them to learn a lesson, but you also don't want to destroy that drive, you know, like, hey, my dad's not letting me play sports this year because I got arrested or I got caught drinking. And then now you've killed their desire to, you know, to do that type of stuff anymore. So yeah, please share.
So I think it's really important to latch on to things that are very, very important to them. I don't think it necessarily stops with just one parent or even two parents. Sometimes you got to get other people involved. I had one of my boys that got caught shoplifting, and it completely blew me away. This was years ago. It completely blew me away because I didn't see that one coming. And I when I first heard about it, I was like, that can't be right. That can't be right. I got a phone call from my son's football coach. And he said, hey man, you need to call me immediately. It's urgent. I called him back and he's like, hey, so there's a store up the street from me that has a Facebook page. And he's like, have you seen such and such's Facebook page lately? I was like, I don't even think I follow it. He goes, well, you should. He goes, cause I think so-and-so is on it. I was like, why? And he's like, well, they have a screenshot of one of your boys and his friend. And the post says, if anybody knows the parents of these two boys, please have them contact me or they can deal with the police. And I was like, what in God's name is this all about? So I called up there and I said, hey, I saw a photo of my son with a buddy of his. Can you please tell me what's going on? He's like, yeah, you know, your son stole an item from the store. I was like, there's no way. Are you sure? He's like, Yeah. He's like, we have video surveillance of it. And I was like, well, what happened? He's like, well, the kid that your son was with stole something. He's like, and then you see, you know, this kid in your son's ear, and the kid my son was hanging out with, they'd only been hanging out for like a month. So he was a new friend. He's like, you see this, you know, kid in your son's ear for like a good 3 or 4 minutes. You know, he's trying to tempt him to steal. And he's like, and then your son caved and took an item. And I was like, wow. So I grabbed my son and we went up to the store and I told him, I parked the car and I was pissed. And I said, I'm just letting you know right now, whatever, if this guy wants to press charges, he's going to press charges. You're going to pay whatever is coming your way. I'm not going to protect you, not one bit. So we go in there, see the video surveillance, and I just look at my son, and he just looked absolutely devastated because he knew I was disappointed. And the guy who owned the store was a former cop. And he looked at my son. He goes, son, the story I'm telling myself is this is the first time you've ever done this. And he said, yes, sir. He goes, I've been a police officer for 30 years. He goes, I know a good kid when I see one. I know a bad kid when I see one. And son, the boy that you were hanging out with, he's a bad kid. Just a feeling I got. You, I have a feeling you're a good kid. You just got caught up in peer pressure today. He's like, so I'm not going to press charges. I want you to pay for the item that you took. Your dad can deal with whatever consequences is coming your way. So I railed my son. I told him, I was like, yeah, you ain't doing nothing for like 3 months. You're going to basically sit in your room like and stare at the wall. And then whatever I tell you to do work-wise, you know, yard work and all of a sudden, you're just going to do it. And I just went into massive punishment mode. And then I really reflected upon all that. And I was like, man, this is so out of character for him. Like, what is going on? What is going on? So I took him out later that day and I took him for a soda, which I usually have tough conversations when we were in the car. And I said, I don't understand this. What's going on? Like, you got everything going for you. You're a great student. You're a phenomenal football player. Like, you've got this circle of friends. Like, you're a popular kid. You're a confident kid. Like, I don't understand this. Like, where is this coming from? And this is another lesson for us as parents. That's the way I view him. That's the way I label him. Like, he doesn't have a care in the world. He's like the freaking man. And my son looked at me and he goes, Dad, I appreciate you seeing me like that, but that's not what's going on. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, do I have all these friends? I was like, dude, you're on the football team. You're on this, you're on that. And he's like, yeah, but do you see me hanging out with anybody? And he's a great football player. He's one of the best on the team. And I was like, man, no, I guess I don't. And I started like rethinking things. I was like, he just goes out there. He does his job. He comes back, doesn't celebrate, doesn't like hang out with the football team or anything like that. And I was like, this is really weird. He's like, well, I just made friends with this kid that I was with. And if you look at the past 3 or 4 months, I've had friends go in and out of my life because they've either moved, they've gotten into something bad. I've walked, but I don't have anyone to hang out with. He's like, so when this kid that I've been hanging out with told me to do this, he's like, I just did it. He goes, I did it because I didn't want to lose somebody else. And I was like, holy freaking crap. Like, it hit me of why he did it. He did it out of desperation because he didn't want to lose a friend. So we talked about that. And I said, and I thought to myself, the worst thing I could possibly do for him right now is to take him out of football and to take him out of a social circle that was positive. So instead, for the next 90 days, we did the opposite. I said, this was over the summer. I was like, you're going to get up early every day. You're going to journal. You're going to have chores to do from 9 a.m. to 12. After that, you can go out with your friends from 12 to 5. You have to be home for dinner every night. And then we'll make a decision if you can go back out with friends or if you're going to stay home. I was like, but that is your schedule. And then you have to do some journaling before bed. And I want to see it every morning, every night. And it was things like, what is he grateful for? What is he most excited about? Things that have happened that he's, you know, can reflect upon and that kind of thing. And that turned into an incredible 90 days for him where he really got clear on a lot of things. And to be quite honest, I didn't really have to punish him too much he felt bad enough disappointing me, and he felt really bad disappointing his football coach, because his football coach ran the hell out of him on the day that he found out. And that experience really imprinted him. He hasn't done anything like that since. That was 3 years ago.
What would you do as a father if he is like, no, I'm going to keep hanging out with this guy? You know, he is my only friend. And I mean, obviously the punishment aside, when you start to see your kid hanging out with a group that you know is not good for him or her, I mean, what would you suggest a parent do in that situation?
Well, I think you got to take age in consideration for that. You know, if my kid is 13, 14, 15 years old, what I say goes, not him. If I say you're not hanging out with this crowd, you're not hanging out with this crowd. You're just not. Just the way it is. Now, if they're a bit older, you know, 16, 17, 18 years old, there's not a whole lot I can say about it. But I will say this, it'd be like, if something bad happens to you, that's on you. You're going to have to be the one to pay for that, not me. And I won't go to bat, because you know I'm not on board with how you're operating. So sooner or later, you know, it hurts you as a parent to see that. But at the same time, there are some things that you control and there are some things you just can't control.
I really like this journaling thing, even though it was 90 days. Does he still do any of that?
No, he doesn't do it right now. But yeah, he did do it for that 90 days.
What kind of things were, I mean, I know you mentioned, you know, one of them was, what are you grateful for? But what are some other things that you had him journal about?
So every day was three things that he was grateful for. The second thing is, what was something he failed at that day? And what did he learn? So a lesson that he learned. And then the third question was, what is he most excited about the next day and why? Those three questions were very easy, and it was great for a 12-year-old, because that's how old he was at the time. And it sparked a lot of really good thoughts and reflections and even conversations between he and I.
I hear those three questions, I immediately think, those are a perfect set of questions to start building a growth mindset in a kid, you know?
Why those?
That's exactly what they are.
Yeah.
Why those questions specifically?
Well, I hear those questions. I think, well, you're looking at potential failures you had in the day. They're not handicapping you. It's just like, hey, today I failed at this. Tomorrow you're looking forward to something you can, you know, win at again. You know, it's almost like I'm going to further the best version of myself every day, but I'm okay. I realize that every day there might be a failure. I mean, I think it's great. I mean, you're ingraining this thought process in a kid early on, and he really, you tell him, yeah, this is to promote your growth mindset. Well, 12, they probably, what do you mean growth mindset? But the questions actually are doing that.
Well, it's like your training, and we talked about, you know, with the dealing with those issues with your loved ones. It's like you just do it automatically. So if you do this journaling for 90 days, when you come up to another failure, you're like, cool, I get a second chance tomorrow, because, you know, it's like, it's just more training, but it's not seen as that. It's seen as more insightful.
And a lot of times I think kids, they're so afraid to make mistakes, not even just with daily stuff or in school. It's just, I mean, you're afraid to screw up. You think it's the end of the world when you make a mistake, and it could be a big mistake, could be a small mistake. You know, you fail a test in your algebra class. Depending on the expectation that you feel like you have on you at home, or maybe it's your own expectation, you feel like it's the end of the world. And I think something like the journaling like that can really teach a kid, hey, it's not the end of the world, but I need to do something about it tomorrow so it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, if you have the same journal entry 5 days in a row of, hey, I screwed this thing up five times in a row, be like, man, I'm just sick of writing this thing down.
Yeah. Bart Simpson on the chalkboard.
Yeah. You have a big like symposium coming up, right?
Yeah, we have the what's called the Dad Edge Summit.
Summit.
It's our live event that we do every single year. Yeah.
So what goes on there?
So it's our live event. So this year, what we're teaching the guys over 2 days is what's called legacy leadership excellence. So helping men lead themselves, lead in their marriages, and lead as a father. And we've got some excellent speakers this year. We've got Anthony Trucks, who's a former NFL football player, Super Bowl champion with the Steelers. Matt Berdow, who is absolutely amazing. That's all he teaches is leadership, masculinity, fatherhood. So he's going to be one of our speakers as well. And we're actually going to be kicking this thing off at First Form headquarters here in St. Louis, which is, if you're not familiar with First Form, it's Andy Frisella's company, First Form supplements and that kind of thing. So we're kicking it off there.
Awesome.
Do you involve fitness in any of your kind of talks with like these summits, these, you know, forums, your podcast, anything like that? Do you ever talk about kind of the importance of a dad being fit? And I say that only just because I think it's so huge for any dad to be able to just get out and do things with their family, with their kids, you know, and with the obesity rate of America, a lot of dads aren't able to do that. And so kids are, you know, not able to experience that play, so to speak. Do you ever talk about bringing any speakers that talk about that, or how do you feel about how important that is?
I think it's foundational. So fitness has been a part of my life ever since I was 17. I don't think I've ever missed more than a few days going by without doing something fitness related, even if it's just going for a run or a walk. But you'll find me in the gym Monday through Saturday. I actually, this past year, my 14-year-old, he told me on New Year's Eve last year that, we sit around every New Year's Eve and we state what we're going to do big, you know, for goals in the next year. And my 14-year-old looked at me and he goes, "I want to do a bodybuilding show. It's on April 30th. You're going to do it with me." And I was like, "I'm sorry, what?" And he's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I already looked it up. You know, it's not far from here. You and I are going to compete together." And I'm sitting there like, I've always been fit, but at the time I was like 195 pounds, probably 18-20% body fat, definitely nowhere near like being a bodybuilding show. And I'm like, "Dude, that's 16 weeks away." He's like, "Yep." He goes, "We get to train every day together. And I was like, "Where do I sign up?"
Yeah, that's it right there. I'm in.
Yeah, I was in. And we did it. We did it on April 30th. But I'll tell you, I mean, like, my boys have seen both me and my wife. I mean, we do family workouts. They call them garage workouts, where we're swinging kettlebells and doing pull-ups and we're doing sprints. And we've always worked out together as a family. And my wife is a very fit person. Like, fitness is a huge part of who I am. Like, it's part of my core identity. And what I'll tell you is that I think it's insanely important. And I think it's the lowest hanging fruit that you can have as an adult to improve your entire life. Like, if you're more fit, and I'm not talking about like you need like a six pack, you need all this other stuff, but if you're taking care of yourself, if you're exercising, you're eating nutritional foods for the most part, you're going to be a more productive person. You're going to have less brain fog. You're going to be less irritable. You're going to have more patience. You're going to feel like you have more capacity to deal with the stresses of life if you're a more fit person here and in the body, the mind, the heart, everywhere. And all four of my boys are fit. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they constantly see my wife and I. That's a huge part of our life as well. And we do it together as a family as well. Like, I think it is monumentally important.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying of, hey, if you are constantly on your phone, you're telling your kids to get off their tablet, they're gonna be like, "Yeah, whatever." But if they see you working out every right. single day and not eating like junk, and
they come to you and tell you you're gonna train,
you're gonna
with
do a bodybuilding
yeah,
show
you're doing
with,
it
you.
With me. Yeah.
How did you do in the bodybuilding show?
I did. I mean, I did good. I got second in two categories, and I got fourth in another. So I did good, and my son did good. He got second in both his categories, and he won the best presentation. So the best of the entire show, and he was only 14. He's the youngest kid, and he won the best presentation. So I thought that was pretty monumental. But for us, I mean, like, you know, especially for, I mean, I know for him, like, placing in the show was a real big deal. And for me, I was just like, you know, I told him at the end of this, I was like, "Dude," I was like, "hardest 16 weeks I've had in a long time." I was like, "But to me, like, you know, doing well in the show was a, was a micro bonus of the 16 weeks that I got to spend with him. Conversations we had in the gym, you know, getting ready for it, you know, even the drive there, you know, it was 3 hours, you know, and it was something we'll never forget.
It's awesome, man. You guys are I'm getting excited. My kids are so little. We're just barely hanging on every day. So the thought of actually getting to a point where we could hang out, it sounds pretty awesome.
And you guys got just so many great opportunities headed your way.
So how can people find out about you? I know that you have kind of you've created a community of dads that want to get better. Like, how can our listeners join in on that?
Sure. Just the Dad Edge. You can find me everywhere there. Our website is thedadedge.com. Everywhere on social media is the Dad Edge. If you want to just find me just in general, I'm not hard to find. Larry Hagner is my name. There's very few people out there with that name. So it's not like I'm, you know, John Smith or anything like that. But you can find me just about anywhere.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Larry. I appreciate it, man.
You bet. Thanks for having me, you guys. Appreciate it.
We got some people to thank, Tom. Some people are joining our Patreon, and to be honest with you, we could not do any of this without our patrons.
Yeah, you know what we noticed a lot last month is a lot of guys and gals signing up for the yearly stuff and
get a huge discount.
Taking the 15% discount, so that's cool. But yeah, in September, we had Rory Blanchard sign up, Brett Hotchkiss, DJ Volkgommer, Gunnar Hinson.
Gunnar, nice.
I know. Buddy Pierce, Bob Lynn, Taryn Madison, Dustin Houghton.
Thanks, Dustin.
Colton Wood, and another first namer only, Richard.
Richard.
I like that. I like when they do that.
I do too.
Josh Liesveld, Mark Fleming, Ryan Jaderquist, Israel Garcia. Our buddy Marcos Orozco from Florida.
Nice, buddy. Thank you.
So appreciate that. Thanks for signing up. Tyler Brewer, Lainey Osborne. Lainey doing our class?
Yeah.
Lainey's doing our class in a couple weeks too, so that'll be cool. Marco Beltrami and Kevin McCarthy.
It's a pretty cool community. Just keeps growing, and the ability for us to do all of this stuff is all thanks to our patrons.
Yep. Not to mention the benefits you get.
Yeah.
You know, especially, like I said, a couple weeks here, we have our hands-on class. So if you're a Patreon member, get a 20% discount on that. So
thank you.